This is Ask the Experts. Here's Karan Bhatia.
I am Karan Bhatia. Welcome to Ask the Experts. This week we are powered by DraftKings. We have a very special show for you. We're going to be talking to some of the GOATs in MMA media and getting you ready for UFC 278 and all the other great combat sports coming up this weekend. First up, I will be talking to the man himself, Ariel Helwani, of course, the host of MMA Hour. You've seen him everywhere. We're going to be talking about the fights this weekend and his journey and his process. What makes Ariel Helwani Ariel Helwani? You're going to want to hear that conversation. Then next up, my broadcast partner from Ring City USA, Brian Campbell. We've seen him on Showtime Sports Morning Combat. He's going to break down all of the great fights coming up, the boxing matches coming up, BKFC, UFC. We're going to talk about it all and get a little bit into his drive as well. And then the Schmo. You've seen the Schmo everywhere. He's always at events. He was actually in Salt Lake City getting ready for this UFC event. He's going to a press conference shortly. I was able to catch up with him and break down the upcoming UFC pay-per-view. And like I said, this is a massive weekend for combat sports. So let's talk about it before we get to our interviews. UFC 278, it's topped, of course, by Usman Edwards. This is a rematch. The one thing to remember, both guys have actually gotten better since the rematch. The question is going to be, is a better version of Edwards going to be able to take out a better version of Usman? It seems like Usman's invincible right now. He's taken out people in rematches. Covington, Masvidal. He's looked like the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the UFC. He's performed that way. And I personally expect to see nothing less on Saturday night, but I do think it'll be a test because Edwards, this means a lot to him. This fight means a lot to him because he's been trending in the right direction. He's been waiting for a chance to go back to the top of the mountaintop against Usman, and this will be his opportunity. We also mentioned BKFC from London, MVP taking on Mike Perry. Fascinating matchup. I can't wait for that. We have PFL action also in London. It's a huge combat sports weekend for London. We got Kayla Harrison in action, Chris Wade, many others. It's a big event over there on that side of the pond. Combat sports is having a moment across the pond because we mentioned Edwards as well. And then boxing, Anthony Joshua. He's getting his chance to have a rematch against Alexander Usyk. Joshua lost the first fight. It's going to be fascinating to see what kind of matchup this will be and what kind of game plan Joshua brings in this time. The first time around, he tried to box Usyk. Usyk is the smaller man. You would think the bigger guy would try to brawl. Joshua didn't do that. He got outboxed by the better boxer in Usyk. It seems like this time Joshua's trying to bulk up a little bit, trying to fight with power, maybe try to smother Usyk, use his size. He's got a new trainer. So you're expecting to see a different game plan. That's different than when Joshua lost to Andy Ruiz and then beat him. That time around, he went for it and tried to brawl, got hurt, got knocked down, lost, came back and boxed. It's almost the opposite here. The thing that's worth mentioning, what makes it so fascinating, Alexander Usyk has been training. He's been fighting for his country. He's also been putting on size. So a lot of adjustments. It's going to be a battle of who can make adjustments and who can adjust to the other person's adjustments. So I can't wait for that fight as well. The UFC card has some amazing storylines. We mentioned the main event. There's also Luke Rockhold back in the octagon. First time since 2019. And Costa. Costa missed weight last time. This time he's trying to make weight. There's a difference in not even trying to make weight versus trying and then failing, right? It doesn't seem like last time around he even tried. So the fact that he's trying this time is a whole different thing. It's not that he necessarily struggles in making the weight. It depends when you're actually motivated to do so. And that's what we expect to see from him on Saturday night. So we mentioned all of the amazing matchups. I personally cannot wait. And I'm also looking forward to these interviews that you're about to see. We really got into combat sports, but we also talked about the journey and process that goes along with, you know, working as an MMA or combat sports journalist, an on-air personality, and that's the guests I have today. That is exactly who they are, and we're going to talk to them about their journey, their process, and some words of wisdom from those who are listening. Also, we mentioned DraftKings. There is going to be an exclusive promo code. That promo code is Curran to use on the DraftKings app. And I'm going to give instructions on that after the first interview with Ariel Helwani. That's going to be the exact instructions to use the exclusive promo code and exclusive offer for listeners of Ask the Experts podcast. So without further ado, let's get it started. First up, Ariel Helwani. You've seen him everywhere, known as the GOAT of MMA media and journalism. Here is my conversation with Ariel Helwani. I am Karan Bhatia, lucky enough to be joined by Ariel Helwani. You've seen him everywhere, MMA Hour, Vox Media. I can't even, if I list it all out, the whole time would expire. We know all the great work you've done, absolutely the best in the game. Ariel, how are you doing, my friend?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Karan. Great to be on with you again.
No, thank you so much for taking the time. I know how busy you are. You have multiple shows this week, so appreciate it. I wanted to chat with you, man. We gotta talk about this weekend here. It's such an interesting day for combat sports. Of course, we got Usman Edwards, the rematch, Costa Rockhold. Great. That's happening. We have London PFL, London BKFC. Anthony Joshua, right, from that side of the pond, is fighting for his rematch in boxing. This is such a crazy day for, like, that region of the world. And I know that you mentioned that the kids and the wife are going to be away. You're going to put your feet up and enjoy the whole day. My question to you is, like, has there been such a big day in combat sports for, like, one area of the world before that you can remember?
No, this is really unique, especially when you talk about MMA and boxing. So as you alluded to, this is actually the first time, and I didn't even realize it when it all went down, but my wife and kids are going to Montreal, my hometown, and every time, you know, we go, we all go as a family, but because of work, I had to stay back. Not because of this day, but to just have a lot going on. And I was kind of bummed about it. But then I realized there's like 13 straight hours of combat, most of it happening during the day, right, leading up to UFC 278 at night. And I was like, you know what? I don't really feel so bad anymore because, you know, with a lot of kids, three kids running around and all this stuff, it's hard to just sit on the couch for 13 hours. So I can't wait. And I love the fact that it is very UK-centric. I think the UK combat scene is on fire right now. So it essentially starts with PFL, and that's their first show ever in London. Kayla Harrison, who's one of the best female fighters on the planet, fighting on that card. That's a really big deal. There's an amazing grudge match between New York's own Chris Wade and Brendan Lochnane of England on that card. I love it. They hate each other. They're fighting for a spot in the finale of their 145-pound tournament. Then we get to BKFC, which I'll admit, I'm not a huge bare-knuckle guy, if I'm being honest, but I am a huge fan of Platinum Mike Perry and Michael Venom Page. It's like Bellator and UFC coming together in a bare-knuckle fight. I'm all in. I'll be watching that. Then I can't wait to tune into Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua 2, which is just a fascinating fight for many different reasons. As you well know, I don't have to tell you. And then we get into 278, Leon Edwards of Birmingham, England, going up against Kamaru Usman, the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, for his chance at the welterweight title. I mean, it's going to be incredible. I can't wait. And I love the fact that the UK, like, it seems like all eyes are on UK combat, and they deserve it.
Exactly. Edwards, of course. And then Anthony Joshua, what this means for his career as, like, the heavyweight champion of our era, right? This is going to be a massive moment for him. Before we move on from combat sports, the matchup on this Saturday that you are most looking forward to, the specific fight, is what?
Honestly, it's a toss-up between Usyk, Joshua, because obviously we know what happened last year, last September. What a great fight out of Usyk. Everything that he's been dealing with, his country's dealing with, you know he's going to be fighting with a lot of pride, but with a heavy heart as well. Joshua seemed stoic at the presser, seemed relaxed. You know, what kind of Joshua are we going to see? Are we going to see the Andy Ruiz rematch Joshua, just the boxer using the jab? He's now with a new, you know, head trainer. So I'm very curious to see how that all plays out. But if I had to pick one, and it really does feel like a toss-up, it's really the Leon Edwards story, because if you've been following Leon over the last few years, this man has had to eat a lot of crap sandwiches. I mean, he has had a lot of bad luck thrown his way. And the fact that he is here 7 years after their first fight on the prelims of a Fox card in Orlando, getting an opportunity to become just the second English champion in UFC history, is a really, really big deal for a guy who has taken, you know, the long route. Some people, as you know, they get skyrocketed straight to the title shot. Leon did not get any of that. He did not take any shortcuts. And so So I'm really happy for him. I'm excited to see if he could deliver. So if I had to pick one, it's probably Edwards Usman 2 late Saturday night.
It's a fascinating day. It's interesting with Joshua, the first time around when he lost to Ruiz, we were like, okay, you need to box board and be more careful. This time around, we're like, you need to be the bigger guy and you need to impose your will. It's welcome to combat sports. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your journey and your process. And I did a little bit of homework and I know that back in the college days, you know, it was maybe a little bit of different Ariel Helwani. I know you had some social anxiety. I read a story that you used to wait till 3 a.m. to use the bathroom so you didn't run into anyone, right? And that's crazy for us to even think about because, you know, we see you talking to people for a living now. And I'm just curious of your thoughts. You know, I was listening to Guy Raz, who hosts some podcasts on NPR. I'm a big fan of his. And he mentioned a similar thing where he had some social anxiety, but when he has a reporter's notepad or a microphone, it changes. And I'm just wondering, was that a little bit of your experience too? The more that you got into broadcasting, that did that change your whole process and the way you look at social interactions?
1,000%. Even when I was at Syracuse, I was doing work for three different radio stations, and the same kid who was waiting till 3 a.m. just to go brush his teeth, run in, run out, because we were, you know, in a dorm communal bathroom, would wake up at 4 a.m. and do, you know, radio hits on WAER and go to Z89 and have a combat sports show on Saturday mornings, and really was talking to no one, but I felt very comfortable. It was like the only place that I truly felt like myself. I bet if some of the kids that I would kind of hang out with, because I really kept to myself a lot of the time, saw me, you know, at the dais at Madison Square Garden hosting a press conference, they'd be like, is that the same guy? You know, I wasn't a weirdo or anything like that, but I was very homesick, and I really kept to myself and really just like let my imagination. Honestly, it was a lot of sports watching. It was a lot of fighting. It was a lot of wrestling and boxing and MMA, UFC. And that was kind of like my best friend. So there's something about, like, I talk about this with my wife. My wife is very social. Like, she loves to go out with friends. She loves dinners. She loves get-togethers. I hate them. Even with people that I like, I just want to be by myself. I just want to hang out with my family. And so she loves it. And she would rather do nothing else than that. And then you give her a microphone or something like that, and she's very uncomfortable. So I'm the complete opposite, right? I want nothing to do with the social stuff. Then you give me a microphone, even if it's just you and I right now,
right?
I feel 100% more comfortable. Like, this microphone, I will do like work meetings in this setup right here, talking to this microphone, because I'll feel more comfortable just like being myself, as opposed to if we were talking at a coffee shop or something like that. There's something about this setup, the camera, the light, the microphone, that gives me this confidence, this courage, makes me feel like, you know, I'm strong and powerful. And I've heard this from other broadcasters as well. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe because I grew up dreaming of these guys and idolizing them and looking up to them. But that's definitely the best way to describe me.
You must have not gotten a lot of sleep waiting until 3 a.m. to go to the bathroom and then 4 a.m. for the hit. And also, you know, it's obviously there's nothing negative at all about that. And as a side note, I want to applaud you because of your work in terms of bringing mental health to the forefront. We mentioned social anxiety there. And, you know, I applaud you for being a voice and a champion for that cause. And thank you for that. I wanted to ask you, as your career evolved, we know that you interned at HBO Sports, my old stomping grounds. And I know that you were such a big combat sports fan, such a big UFC fan at the time. Spike was carrying UFC at the time. You got a job at Spike. And I thought that was just a really interesting moment, just as an observer to seeing your journey. I mean, in a way, I feel like someone who wants to get in the industry, getting a job where this sport is being broadcast, that's like reaching the mountaintop. And you did that job and realized this wasn't exactly what you wanted to do. And you bet on yourself and you quit that job and you went out on your own. And I think that's just such a big moment for you. And I'm just wondering if you have any words of encouragement for people who are on their journey, if they're kind of scared to maybe take the leap to do the thing they want to do.
Yeah. And I've done that a few times. I've never been afraid to pivot or to say this isn't for me, because I've always thought of, hey, you only get one life, and I don't want to be 80 years old and say I should have done this, I should have done that. I may have some regrets in terms of like, oh, in college I didn't, you know, party or things like that. But when it comes to my career, I don't want any regrets. And so far, I don't really have any regrets. And had I stayed, I was at Spike for a week when I quit. And it was tough to get there. You know, it's Viacom, it's corporate. It wasn't just like a thing that, you know, fell on my doorstep and I was working there the next week. It was a process. And I got there and I remember, you know, we worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we went to Las Vegas because they were airing a UFC event. And I'm thinking like, all right, I'm going to work on UFC UFC, the home of the UFC. You know, we're going to make some cool video packages, stories, shows, etc. But then I realized, and maybe I was just naive and I didn't do my research, I realized that the UFC actually produces everything. Spike is just, you know, the ones who take the content and put it on the air. And so when we got to Vegas, we did absolutely nothing. And I'm someone who's very motivated and loves to work hard. I mean, my favorite thing to do is work. And because I love it so much, I don't really find it to be a chore or quote unquote work. And I remember talking to my boss and saying, like, so what exactly are we doing here? And he's like, oh, we're just supposed to make sure that everything's okay. And I remember we were sitting at a bar when we had this conversation. It was during the day, and that's just not me. I don't drink, I don't party, I don't do any of that. And I was like, man, we're just here to make sure everything's okay. Like, I feel very useless. So the Monday we came back, I walked into the head man's office. His name is Brian Diamond, and I told him, I'm sorry, I just don't think that this job is for me. And he told me that it was the biggest mistake of my life and that I would regret it and all this stuff. And I just really felt like I would be making a huge mistake if I stayed. And that's, you know, the crossroads of my life. And I started my journey, like, basically from the cubicle. I started my own website because they made me stick around for a month and a half until they found someone to replace me. But I wasn't really doing anything for them. It was all very weird. And so what I would say to someone out there who is feeling the same is, like, you only get one life. Just do it. Like, you know, I talked to some friends and, like, oh, if this happens and then if that happens and then, you know, in a month or that, I'm like, why? Why do you keep giving yourself excuses? Why do you keep putting roadblocks in your way? You only get one shot. You don't know what tomorrow brings. Go for it. Even at ESPN, I could have stayed at ESPN. I knew that it just wasn't the place for me anymore. It was a great opportunity, no hard feelings, but it was time to go. And I don't want to be someone who overstays his welcome. I don't want to be someone who stays just because he's afraid of what could be out there or making a mistake, change, all that stuff. So I'm totally cool. The funny thing about that is I don't like traveling. I don't like moving. I don't like packing. I don't like change in terms of, like, my life. But when it comes to career and passion and feeling like in the morning, I'm going to tackle this, this, and that. I'm going to make this, this, and that content. I'm going to kill it on my show, all that stuff. I could live with change all day long. It's a very strange dichotomy. So I would just say to someone, if you're feeling like it's time for a change, like you need to do something else, do it today, not tomorrow, not next week. Do it today because you don't know what tomorrow brings.
It's very well said. And shout out to Jerry Park, your site, when you first started out. As your journey continued, I mean, you did bounce around to a couple different platforms. And it's, you know, we talked about reaching the mountaintop. You reached the mountaintop in so many different ways. And obviously you were Fox Sports, ESPN, all of the different places that you've been. And obviously now all the great work that you're doing. I remember I texted you once and I said, you know, thank you for helping me as I try to break in. And I remember you wrote back and you said, no problem. You said, I'm still trying to break in. And this was recently. And I remember in my head thinking, wow, if this guy feels like that, then, you know, I have no excuse to keep going. No one does. And it just speaks to your hunger and your motivation. It reminds me of a story. Someone said when they used to ask Tiger Woods when he was working out, how many sets do you have left? No matter what, he would always say four every time. And they say four. He said forever. Right. There is no finish line. You just keep going. And I'm just wondering if, you know, your drive, right, your hunger and your motivation. I mean, obviously, that's been critical to your success. But how have you maintained that throughout your journey?
Man, well, I appreciate all that. Thank you very much. I really don't feel like I have made it. I mean, I look at other people like Mike Breen has made it, right? Like Joe Buck has made it. I'm nowhere near those guys. I mean, I'm not even like 1/10 as good or accomplished as those guys. So just because you're on YouTube and you have this job, this opportunity, still doesn't feel like I make it. Like I've made it. I still feel like I have to prove myself. I still want to do a lot more. I still want to be viewed as not just the combat guy. I love combat sports, but I feel like I could do so much more. I feel like I can interview anyone from any walk of life, and I'm starting to do a little bit more of that on my own YouTube channel just to show people labor of love, something a little bit different. So I feel like maybe that mindset is what keeps me very motivated, very hungry. I feel like 40s, you know, I just turned 40. This is the time where, okay, I've been like kind of building a house, so to speak, and there's some landscaping and stuff, but like now I get to like sit there and actually try to dominate. And when I got to ESPN, by the way, again, you know, no hard feelings. They gave me the confidence and the opportunities to do things that I had never done before, like host radio shows and be on SportsCenter and be on Outside the Lines and E60 and do sidelines for NBA games. That was a huge dream of mine. And so I want to try to do as much as possible, but I don't want to also just be like the guy who pops in and pops out and does a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Like, I want to be known as the guy. Everyone wants to be known as the guy. I want people to talk about me like they talk about Howard Stern as one of the greatest, if not the greatest broadcaster of all time, or some of the other greats. That's a dream. I don't think I will get there because that's like a top 1%, but I'm going to freaking try my hardest to get there and be as good as possible. And I would urge anyone to have the same mindset, because if you're at least my age and you're just kind of sitting around and resting on your laurels and smelling the flowers, then you're going to go down real quickly. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm a bit of the old guy now. Like, I see people, like, I had a guy on my show yesterday who's like, I grew up listening to you. I'm like, what? Grew up listening to me? What the hell, man? I still view myself as a 24-year-old. What are you talking about? Grew up listening to me. So there's other people coming, and I have to be as good and as strong and as hungry as ever. And not just in MMA, not just in combat, in everything. So I don't know. I guess that's just part of my mentality. 80. There's something about that number 80. I'm like, I don't want to regret it. And in my mind, I have 40 years left. So I'm going to keep working.
Well, if you continue at this pace, I'm sure you're not going to regret it. In terms of your work, and you've been around for a while, not forever. You know, you mentioned people said they listened to you growing up, but for as long as you have been around, you've connected with audiences, and there's so much combat sports content out there, right? But there's a reason that people watch your show and they comment, they tune in, they subscribe. And I was actually speaking to one of your producers, New York Rick, and I asked him, I was like, you know, Ariel's, you know, his show is so great, but what is it? What's the special sauce? Like, what is the reason that this show is so popular compared to all the other shows? Not, you know, obviously there's guests, there's access, it's live, like all that stuff. And one thing he said to me that really stuck out. He said it's about Ariel and his vulnerability. And I know, you know, I'm a big Drake fan. I know you are too. Obviously, you're countryman. And one thing about Drake compared to other people in the industry is like he's very vulnerable in his lyrics. I know you've quoted his lyrics on air. He's very vulnerable. And I see that with you as well. We talked about mental health earlier, and you've spoken openly about that. And I'm just wondering if you feel that's also been a part of your success and your longevity to this point is just being open and vulnerable to the audience.
1000%. Like, I don't have, in my opinion, a great broadcast voice. I don't have a great broadcast face. I don't have a great broadcast name. I don't have great broadcast clothes. Like, I don't want to be someone who I'm not. And so when I started out, I remember a lot of the internet commenters would be like, who's this awkward guy? Who's this skinny kid and all this? I was like, this is just me. When I first started, someone told me that I should change my name to Ariel Jacobs. My middle name is Jacob. No one's ever going to hire you or follow you if your name is Helwani. And I was like, this is just who I am. If they don't like me for who I am, then, you know, then so be it. But I can't put on a front, because at some point, you know, that's all going to fizzle away and you have to be yourself. So I think that just being myself, coming across as a regular guy who's not putting on a fake accent or a front or anything like that, and not being Mr., you know, broadcaster guy, has maybe endeared the fans to me. Also, when I first started doing all of this on the internet back in 2006, 2007, I was very raw, right? And I'm still a work in progress and I still need more reps, but I was way more raw back then, 15, 16 years ago. And I think the fact that the fans have seen my evolution, they have seen the ups and downs. I have told them about the ups and downs. I have told them about my mistakes. I've told them about, you know, the stuff that I've had to deal with, but tried to overcome and didn't want them to feel bad for me or, you know, see me lick my wounds, so to speak. I think all makes them feel like they're part of the journey, right? And that's not like something I sat at a desk and said, like, how am I going to get people to like me? That's just who I am. I don't know. I like to be like a genuine, authentic person. And I do feel like as a viewer and a consumer of media, sports media myself, I am drawn to the guys who let us in on their daily struggle and daily life and stuff like that. So why wouldn't I do the same, right? Like, again, like I love Howard Stern. And not so much because of the hijinks and stuff, but like I just love like the banter that he has with his crew, and he tells us about his parents and this and that. Like, that gets you emotionally invested in him as a person. And so I've tried to use that. And over the years, you get more comfortable doing that. Like, early in my career, I was doing way less of that. Now, my favorite parts of the show are when we're just like sort of like shooting the breeze, you know, like not really talking about specific MMA things or even talking to guests. And I feel more comfortable doing that. And I think over time I'll feel even more comfortable doing that. So I developed a lot of that when I did the show with DC, when it was just him and I talking. So yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm just trying to be myself and I'm not trying to put a front, and I guess I'm not afraid to mess up or to like say that, oh, I like well done steak, something as stupid as that, right? Because you know people are going to hate you for it. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, I think it's actually kind of funny that people get mad about this. So I guess that type of stuff is what, you know, endears you to people.
Don't forget the ketchup on that well done steak. So I just have one final question for you. You've been no so problem. Generous with your time. I remember when I was at the Masvidal Diaz press conference in New York, and I remember you attended, you walked in, and there was fans there, it was open to fans. And I remember it was everyone got up and gave you an applause when you walked in. You know, I saw your show this week, and I know fighters have said, you know, Ariel, you're the only one that I'll talk to, right? Based on the relationship. I had done an interview with you at Madison Square Garden, and I posted it, and someone sent me a DM and they said, I can't believe you interviewed Ariel Helwani. He's my idol, right? Those were the words, idol. And so I just have a two-part question for you. One, we talked about the kid in the dorm room, and I'm just wondering, like, I mean, could that kid have ever imagined, you know, where you're at now, that someone would call you their idol, that they would be so into your work and so, you know, into your content that they would say something like that? Could that kid ever have imagined? And the part two of that is also, you gave some great advice about people to just leap in and start on their journey, but you kept going, right? And sometimes I think for us and, you know, people in their, everyone in their journey, it feels like sometimes it feels impossible to keep going. And you did that. So I'm just wondering if you have any, you know, final words of wisdom to people. Not, you mentioned how to get started, but maybe some words of wisdom on how to keep going as well.
Yeah, no, two great questions. Man, I mean, the kid in the dorm, he felt very insignificant, you know, and he was very sad and very depressed. And I felt for my 3 years at Syracuse, I truly felt like there was a black cloud hanging over me. And that's not a great feeling. And I know a lot of people feel that way. And I didn't really even understand like what depression was or what, you know, feeling anxious down really was, because we didn't really talk about it as much. And so if you would have told that kid that it would have all worked out to this degree, that I would have a family, that I would have three incredible kids and a wife and a house and all that stuff, he would be thrilled. And that kid wanted to go to ESPN and he wanted to do this and he wanted to be on camera and he wanted to be well known and he wanted to be a star and go to, you know, events. But I couldn't have felt further away from that. So yeah, it's absurd, man. Like when people tell me like, you know, you and DC got us through the pandemic and right. They were the only thing that made us laugh and stuff like that. It's like, it's actually very overwhelming to hear that, because I am someone who loves media and I love sports more than anything. And I look to other people for that escape. You know, like I was watching, you know, old wrestling with my kids early on in the pandemic, just so we could think about something else and I could teach them about Bret the Hitman Hart. And so to think that someone else was using me as the escape is just like the greatest compliment that you could possibly get, right? Like that, wow, of all the things out there, from every streaming platform to YouTube to podcasts to everything, movies, and you chose my stupid show, you know, and you chose to listen to me, you chose to spend an hour with me. It's really the greatest compliment. And so that's why, like, when someone comes up to me, when someone says something nice to me, like, it still blows me away. It will never get old. And as far as part two, you know, one thing that has been very important to me has been to not feel bad for myself. And I think sometimes when we don't get the big break, when we don't get the job, when we don't get the opportunity, when we don't get the platform, the whatever, and you know, it's tough, man. It's really, really tough. And you got to grind. And then you sometimes feel like, this is so stupid. This is such a waste of time. My friends are doing real estate and they're working half as hard as I am. And they're making all this money and they're on all these trips. And I'm sitting here talking to freaking fighters and no one's, you know, this guy's mad at me and this manager is mad at me and this fighter is mad and blah, 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 blah. And this person doesn't want to pay me and all this shit. And there are a lot of opportunities where you can A, quit, or B, feel bad for yourself, lick your wounds, feel sorry, say like, oh, no one likes me, no one this, I'm never going to make it. And one thing that I've done, like, trust me, I've hit a lot of roadblocks and a lot of them well publicized.
Yeah.
And I've really tried not to feel sorry for myself, not to, you know, do the old like lick my wounds and woe is me. You could do that for a day. You know, that's normal. That's human. That's natural. But, you know, the best example that I could give was I was in Las Vegas. If I may give this example, I was in Las Vegas for UFC. I believe it was 213. and I live in New York, and so I was at a fight on a Saturday. On the Saturday, I got the opportunity to be part of the World Tour, Maymac World Tour broadcast team with Mauro and Brendan Schaub and I think Brian Custer and Paulie Malignaggi. I'm like, wow, this is great. Showtime. A year ago, I was on Fox. I got fired. It was horrible, blah, blah, blah. So I flew to New York on the Sunday, did my show in New York on Monday, the MMA Hour, and then from the studio, went back to the airport, took a red eye to LA for the first leg of the World Tour. So now I arrive at like 1 a.m. or something in LA. World Tour starts the next day, Tuesday morning. I've got my best suit on. I'm ready to go. I'm about to leave the hotel, and I get a text from Steven Espinoza of Showtime, who tells me he needs to meet with me at the JW Marriott across from the Staples Center, now the Crypto.com Arena, and we right. got to talk. And I'm like, oh man, this isn't good. And so we talk, and he tells me UFC Dana White made a huge stink about me being involved in the coverage, and they have to remove me. I'm literally there with my suit ready to go. I just flew, and I'm out. Now, Steven, I will never say a negative thing about that man. A true mensch, a stand-up guy, paid me, didn't have to, you know, like gave me everything that was part of the deal. And I could feel and see that he truly felt bad about the kind of mess that this was, but I didn't want to be a hindrance. And so it sucked. He walked away and I was crying. Like this is a huge deal. And I felt like an idiot. I felt like a guy, like I felt like the person, you know, at the bride at the altar and right. her groom didn't show up, right? Like I've got my dress on and no one's there. And I composed myself and there's a bunch of fans out there, right? I composed myself and I was like, F this, man. I'm going to cover this fight better than any outlet on the planet. I'm going to kill ESPN. I'm going to kill everyone. I'm going to just dominate everyone from the UFC to Showtime. Everyone was my enemy. And I think we did that. And I think our coverage was better than anyone. We're the only independent outlet that got sit-downs with Conor and Floyd. I had to wait at Floyd's Gentleman Club for 6 freaking hours for him to show up, but we got it. We did live shows. We had incredible stuff with Chris Eubank. I mean, it was one of the most fun summers of my life, of my career. And I was sitting in the rafters for the fight. I didn't get any special treatment. I didn't get anything. They didn't want to give me an interview with Conor at the media day. And we got it all done because I did not want to let anyone win. I didn't want to let anyone like stop me from dominating. And I didn't feel sorry for myself. Like it sucked. It was horrible. Like I was going to be there. Showtime was a huge deal. And I just didn't feel sorry for myself. And so that was hard. I remember. And I remember Conor seeing me and hearing about it that day. And he's like, what happened? And I was like, don't worry about it. Could we just have an interview? Like I could have been like, oh, Conor, woe's me. Give me a hug. Blah, blah, blah. Like, no. F that. We're moving on. Can we do an interview right now for MMA Fighting? Because that's who's on my side right now. And that's who's paying me to be here. And I will dominate for them. And so like, that's my little short, you know, story about you could feel bad. You could cry. You could for a minute, but then you freaking dust yourself off. You keep going and you keep fighting. And I think the more you show up, like I've always said, 80% of success is just showing up. The more you show up, the more good things happen.
Thank you for sharing that. It's almost like, you know, the old saying, like, you know, you used to pray for the things that are happening now. It's almost like be grateful for where you're at, but then keep pushing. And obviously your journey has been a testament to that. I want to thank you so much for continuing to inspire, for being authentically you, for all the great work that you're doing. And I very much appreciate the time and I hope to chat with you soon.
Oh, you're the man. You're doing incredible stuff. And I know you're fighting as well and you're pushing through and you're hustling and you're scratching and clawing. You're doing really great. You're one of the best guys covering combat sports. I'm not just saying that because we're talking. So much respect. Keep at it. Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
After all of those words of wisdom, I have to keep at it. There's no choice.
Thanks, man.
That was the great Ariel Helwani breaking it down, talking about his journey, his process, and of course, all the great fights this weekend. Next up, we're going to have Brian Campbell. But first, here is a word from our sponsor, DraftKings, and an exclusive offer for listeners of Ask the Experts podcast with Karan Bhatia. MMA fans, UFC 278 has an action-packed fight card capped off by the anticipated Usman versus Edwards rematch. I personally can't wait for that one. Throw down and grab your own epic victory with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. This Saturday, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly, win or lose. If that's not enough action, you can also get a $10 risk-free same-game parlay. Just combine multiple bets, like which fighter will come out on top, how long the fight will last, and more. I'm really excited about this card. We mentioned, of course, Usman versus Edwards, the rematch. I can't wait. It's been a while since the first fight, and I think both guys have gotten better. They're both doing huge things in the UFC, and that's why it is such an anticipated matchup for me. And then you got Costa and Rockhold. I mean, the storylines write themselves. Both guys who need a massive performance and a massive win on this huge stage. It's a great weekend for combat sports. So, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code CURRAN, C-U-R-R-A-N. Bet $5 on UFC 278 and get $200 in free bets instantly. That's code CURRAN, C-U-R-R-A-N, this Saturday on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. Remember, minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. Please check out the show notes for details. Next up, it's our man, BC. Here is Brian Campbell. I am Karan Bhatia, joined by BC, Brian Campbell. You've seen him everywhere, of course, writer for CBS Sports. We see him on Morning Combat, calling fights for Showtime. Of course, my broadcast partner for Ring City on NBC Sports. Brian, you're everywhere. And lucky enough for me to get a few minutes with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's, you know, hot summers these days, so I'm sweating bullets here in the basement, but, you know, that's a job hazard that I have to deal with. Okay. Can we get some central air in here, please? All right. I'm doing great.
I remember when we were out at the first show for Ring City and at Wildcard, and it was outdoors in LA in the winter, and it was like 55 degrees, and a lot of people were, complaining about how cold it was. And I think me and you were like, this is great. You know, limit the sweat.
It's fantastic.
We got blazers on. This is perfect. So
fully agreed on that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So of course I want to talk to you about the great combat sports weekend we have here on tap. It's actually an amazing weekend for the UK, right? The UK is being represented in some huge fights and having events over there as well. So I got to ask you about UFC 278. We know it's Usman Edwards, the rematch. What are your thoughts on this fight? How's it going to play out? Obviously they did fight once before. That was a while ago. A lot has changed. It almost seems like both guys have gotten better since then. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, both guys have gotten extremely better. So if you consider that their first fight in 2015 was just Usman's second UFC fight after winning the Ultimate Fighter. For Edwards, it was his fourth, but you know, no one was talking about either one of these guys. In fact, this was the featured early preliminary bout before, you know, the fans even fill in the seats. Now, look, the knee-jerk reaction, because Usman has gone on to evolve from this to become not only a well-rounded fighter, but the pound-for-pound king and welterweight champion. And obviously, we know Edwards 9-0 with one no contest since that loss. You'd say, look, what can we learn from that first fight? Nothing, right? Usman won a three-round decision by being who he used to be, exclusively a wrestler. But I think that's a little too, you know, short-sighted to really put it that way. Look, have they both gotten extremely better? Yes. And I think especially for Usman, especially in the last 4 to 5 fights since joining forces with trainer Trevor Whitman, where he's just taken this base as a wrestling cardio beast and expanded it to evolve his striking and to become a finisher when needed. But the same equation that fueled that first fight really is the same thing to me of how I'm going to look at this second one. Usman, the rightful and firm favorite, but even though he may not be a full-time wrestler these days, when you look at the matchup, Edwards, a better striker than he was, it's still taking Edwards down, putting him on his back, wearing him out. That has to be job one for Kamaru Usman. Yes, he's going to look to show off his striking in ways that he couldn't 7 years ago, but if anything, I'm looking at this, is this a possible trap fight for Kamaru based on the coming attractions in the future, anything from Khamzat Chimaev to maybe a move up in weight. He's teasing a move up in light heavyweight. I look at this fight as a fight Usman should win, a fight I expect him to win, but will he end up getting caught in that trap of looking ahead too far? It hasn't tripped him up to this point. Consistency has been a big part of his success, 15-0 in the UFC, getting better every fight. I respect the challenger, Rocky Edwards, But I look at this as a formality in some ways, in terms of what Usman can do moving forward with the short window he has left at age 35 to completely maximize that potential.
It's always dangerous when a fighter has other plans. Looking ahead is never good in combat sports. You mentioned Chimaev. You mentioned other things. There's been talks, I think, of fighting Canelo Alvarez in a boxing ring. Right? You don't want to think too far ahead, especially when you have Leon Edwards.
There's been talks of that. Right. I mean, do you believe it? Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we look
I'm talking about getting in shape this year. I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, come on.
Fair point. If we look at the odds provided by our friends at DraftKings, Usman -390, Edwards +320. But to your point, it's probably even closer than that, just based on where these guys have been since the first fight. There's also, of course, Costa and Rockhold. Fascinating for so many different reasons. We know Costa's had the issues with weight. We know Rockhold hasn't been in the octagon in quite some time. And of course, we got Aldo and Merab. I mean, this is an interesting card. What else intrigues you from this UFC 278 card?
Yeah, the middleweight bout you mentioned in the co-main event is a weird one. It's exciting. In fact, you know, it's two of the best-looking guys in UFC history. Not that that vanity matters, but the deal is, can Luke Rockhold, the former middleweight champion at 37, you know, find a fountain of youth? He's been talking about finding his purpose again and the reason why he wants to come back and prove to people that he's still got it. But it's been a long time since he's won. In fact, 2017, excuse me. And the three losses he's had around that, along with some inactivity, have all been pretty much vicious knockouts against elite foes. Rockhold, no one's doubting if there's still something underneath. It's, can he channel and harness that in the face of one of the most dangerous strikers this game has in Paulo Costa, who can finish you at any time? But we all saw the way he lost his title bid to Israel Adesanya and the excuses he made afterwards of being up all night, being drunk on red wine because he couldn't sleep. I mean, just a lot of bizarreness, which led, of course, as you mentioned, into missing weight in his next fight against Vettori and really just fighting, to be fair, like a caveman. Now, that's fun. That fuels entertainment. I certainly like Costa's chances of continuing that type of style, but there's just as many questions about him coming into this fight as there are Rockhold, to be fair. I expect fireworks. I expect action. And I expect the winner to really be looking to get closer and get back into that title picture because of their respective names and how exciting their styles can be.
Let's take an overview for a second at this Saturday in combat sports and the region of the world that is represented here and has such a big day, and that is the UK. We mentioned Edwards, of course. Anthony Joshua is having his rematch with Alexander Usyk. That is a massive fight for Joshua's career, right? To define himself as the heavyweight of this era, which obviously he's trying to do. He's going to have success against Usyk. He obviously was beaten the first time around. Then we have PFL from London, and we have BKFC from London. I mean, has there been a combat sports day that represents a region of the world like this before?
Not that I can remember. In fact, I can't remember a weekend as loaded as this one. It's like you want to talk to the promoters and network execs and say, hey, guys, not much going on next weekend if you wanted to stretch it out. But there will be competition, you know, for those screens and a few of those given the London UK-esque start time, including the Joshua fight in Saudi Arabia is going to start in the late afternoon. So a lot of competition among the, you know, the eyeballs of, do you want the classic heavyweight championship out on the boxing side? Or do you want this weird BKFC bonanza of former UFC star Mike Perry against former, you know, against current Bellator king Michael Venom Page MVP? So it's a wild, it almost reminds me of that first weekend in May every year, which isn't always just about combat sports, although you typically get biggest boxing match of the year, loaded UFC pay-per-view card, but then you get the Kentucky Derby, the Yankees Red Sox, the NHL and NBA playoffs. This weekend in just a combat space kind of feels like that. I don't know how I'm going to keep up, but I'm going to have the caffeine ready. Believe it.
Got to have that ready. I know you need that, as we all do. And we shouldn't disrespect next week. We got KSI and two fights also in London. So there a little bit of interesting combat sports going on there. And this weekend, we should also talk about we have the Showtime card, which I know you'll be calling the undercards and involved there. So it's just at a great time for combat sports, really interesting time for combat sports. With all of these fights that we talked about and all of these different cards and all of the storylines, what intrigues you most about what this weekend?
Oh, it's the heavyweight championship rematch. Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua. It's not just the royalty that comes with heavyweight lineage and history and the fact that three of the four belts will be contested in this rematch. But if you dig deeper on these guys. And we remember their first fight in 2021, a close but, you know, sound decision win, by Usyk in an upset bid. So much has changed since then. And it's not just Anthony Joshua looking to right the wrong the same way he did after getting upset by Andy Ruiz a couple years ago and winning the rematch. He's completely changed his team for the most part, dropping trainer Rob McCracken and bringing in, you know, Mexican-American glorified trainer, former great fighter himself, and Robert Garcia, who provides a much different style, aggressive body attack. That, in a lot of ways, was exactly what was missing for Joshua in the first fight. I thought he tried to outbox the boxer and Usyk too much, and although he put up a respectable effort, there's certainly a lot of room to grow. And on the flip side for Usyk, we had legitimate questions coming off of his undisputed cruiserweight championship reign of, did he have the size, chin, power to compete at this level? You know, he doesn't have heavyweight finishing elite power, but he proved in that first fight that he has enough pop to get AJ's attention. And what's even deeper in his backstory is obviously the Ukraine-Russia conflict, of which Usyk, for some points, was on the front lines with a lot of the other combat sports stars from that area. And to hear his promoter, his manager, talk this week in the press conference and say, we've never seen him this determined, because you almost get the feel that it's not about boxing. He was the guy, according to his manager, Igis Klimas, who was going to the military hospitals, who was visiting a lot of, you know, taking part in the conflict. This is about representing his country. And I think when you have that level of meaning, it gets a little bit different. I think you saw Usyk, who had the traditional, you know, Ukrainian warrior haircut and had just that solemn but yet jokerish smile underneath the solemn, serious look. I think people do need to look into that. He's already one of the most mentally toughest fighters we've seen on this level. He has a lot to fight for that go way beyond the glory of boxing. In fact, he readily admits it was the soldiers on the front line everywhere he went that said, get back in the ring. We need you to fight for us, to give us motivation, to represent us. It's already a tough fight odds-wise to pick. It's already a tough fight from the standpoint of, what if Joshua at 6'6 and muscular fights like the bigger man? Can he walk in there and have an easier day? Usyk's probably going to have to be stopped if you're going to get through him, if you're Anthony Joshua. And that equation the second time around, I think it's going to be fireworks, high drama, high tension. If you're not, you know, front row in front of your TV for this one Saturday afternoon, I mean, do you even like sports, boxing, people?
Are you definitely alive? Don't like people. I think if you're not watching this fight, you don't like people. I think that's the best way to put it. And it's just such a fascinating matchup because of the stakes in the heavyweight division. And it's interesting because when Joshua lost to Ruiz, right, what did we all say? Hey, why are you brawling with this smaller man? Why don't you use your size, Anthony Joshua, and outbox him with a distance? And that's what he did in the rematch. Now we flip it and we say, hey, Anthony Joshua, why were you boxing with a superior boxer in the smaller man of Usyk? Why don't you impose your size and be the big bad guy in there? Now, I think he's going to try to do that. But the one interesting thing is, you pointed out Usyk and his preparation. He's no slouch, and no offense to Andy Ruiz, but this isn't Andy Ruiz when he won the heavyweight championship of the world and decided that partying and snacking, by his own admission, or what he was going to do. Alexander Usyk has been fighting on the front lines and training. And if you look at him, his physique, it looks like he's also bulked up. It kind of reminds me of the way that adjustments were made with Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, also, of course, in the heavyweight division, were made between their fights. And if you look at, like, for example, from fight one to fight two, Fury bulked up in weight and said, hey, I'm not going to box you anymore. I'm going to come at you and use my size. And he did that effectively. And then in fight three, Wilder was like, well, I'm also going to bulk up. And I remember one thing that Wilder said. He said, I can now bench press Fury's weight, which means I can handle his power. And he did end up knocking him down twice in that third fight, even though he eventually did get stopped. But there's so many interesting adjustments in the world of heavyweights. And I'm just curious to your thoughts of, like, how that plays out at heavyweight and, you know, how fascinating those type of changes are in this sport.
Oh, it's so fascinating, especially when you have an active heavyweight division with people you want to see who actively want to fight each other. And, oh, by the way, are just vulnerable enough in their own ways, especially Anthony Joshua, that makes it where you don't know what's going to happen. And to the point you just made, you don't know who's going to make that key adjustment, add to their game, or put on a different identity in order to win. Look, like we said, Joshua's got to be the bigger man. I've heard some people say he's got to keep Usyk off balance, meaning, should he be the puncher when Usyk's trying to box? Should he be the boxer when Usyk's trying to punch? He's got to do anything he can to change the rhythm and the flow that Usyk established in the first fight. But on the flip side, even though Usyk, as I mentioned, not known at all for sort of fight changing or fight ending power, he was able to get to AJ's chin early. And while it would be maybe rude and disrespectful to refer to a battle-tested former champion as Anthony Joshua, as Chinny, we know he's vulnerable. We've seen him be hurt and come back, get up and come back. But you can hurt him, which is exactly what Andy Ruiz did with a big left hook to the side of the head to begin the trouble that led to that upset stoppage loss. You have to wonder if you're Usyk, for all the talk about, I've never trained this hard in my life. I mean, his manager, Igor Klimas, said he did 100 kilometers on a bicycle in 113 degree weather in Saudi Arabia, then swam 10 kilometers right before the press conference, was in the pool for 5 hours practicing holding his breath, held his breath for 4 minutes and 40 seconds until they said he was shaking and they had to revive him and grab him out.
That's what you call an average Sunday, right?
For a guy like me, that's what I do in my free time. But if you're Usyk, you're preparing for war. War meaning boxing war, an action fight. Will he have to stand and bang in a way that really, if you followed Usyk's career, the toughest fight he's had before Anthony Joshua may have been that World Boxing Super Series semifinal bout against undefeated Miris Brightis of Latvia, a thriller, an instant classic of a fight that many people didn't see because it wasn't prominently featured on American television. But Usyk won, I think it was a split or majority decision, and he did that by standing in, taking big shots, and firing back. We could seriously see role reversals from both of what it looked like in the first fight. But again, however you slice it, it's going to be dramatic, and Tyson Fury is up in the bullpen. I know, you know, he retires every other day, but that's the fourth belt in the impossible dream, if you're a boxing fan, of having a four belt unified, undisputed, one name, one face, one division champion. Been a long time, right? It's been a long time, and you know, no disrespect to the Klitschkos, but that was a low moment in heavyweight history. We're back. We're back in a big way. That's why this Saturday matters so much, even with the competition around this rematch.
It's we've gotten close a couple times to getting all four belts and the lineal championship. Of course, the Klitschkos, you know, through the family had all four belts, but that's different than just one undisputed man. We're seeing that a lot more in combat sports, which is great. I think that's what we all want. It's going to be a dramatic day. I like that word that you use, the drama. There's a lot of probably spots for value there with underdogs who are going to make a statement on a day like Saturday. Before I let you go, though, I wanted to also ask you a little bit about your journey and your process. Obviously we mentioned all the great work that you are doing and you have been doing. I know you spent times in other places like ESPN and elsewhere, but you followed your passion and your dream to be an on-air broadcaster and do everything that you wanted to do. You chose not to sit in any comfortable role for too long. And I'm just curious about your thoughts about, you know, how you were able to have that mindset and continue to move forward and pursue your dream.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying all that stuff. I don't know if it's deserved, but I'll take it. You know, I learned a lot of lessons along the way. There's always fears at times, you know, if I'm a jack of all trades, am I a master at nothing? But I think, you know, cross-training, if you're going to use that term in this case, has been a big secret to my success. There's been times I've been an editor because that was the closest I can get to writing and some of my dreams of being on camera. So I've got the editing background. I've got the writing background. I've hosted podcasts in the broadcasting space and boxing. I feel just as comfortable if you throw me out there as an analyst, as a play-by-play guy, as a sideline reporter. And I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to the passion. I love what I'm doing. I got out of my own way at a certain point in my career. And I just want to be a part of this. I just want to lend my enthusiasm, my passion, my knowledge of history to this game. And to get here, you know, you got to have people telling you no. You got to have people telling you that they don't think you're cut out for it, that they don't see you in that role. But if you see yourself in that role, and that itching won't stop. And, you know, maybe if you looked at the specific aspects of my career arc, some of it tied into necessity. You know, if I didn't make it, the family wasn't going to eat in some aspects, to be fair, you know, paying the bills, keeping the heat on and the lights on. So that develops a passion where I've got nowhere to go but to make this happen. And I'm thankful to do that. But, you know, a lot of people come in and out of this space with ability. It really comes down to hard work, passion, dedication, commitment to who hangs around and keeps working in these jobs like you and I have been lucky enough to get, you know, cups of coffee here and there at. But, it's if you can do it all, if you love what you're doing, man, it's, you know, the phone will ring. It will. It'll keep ringing. So I've been happy and blessed to always work hard and keep trying to improve my game and in the areas where I feel I'm lacking. And here I am today, sweating in my basement. It's fantastic.
Certainly the pinnacle of success, as you describe it. Your last question for you, just playing off of what you just said, your Twitter bio, first line, daring to be great. And I think that kind of sums up what you just said. And I'm just wondering if you touched upon it in your last answer, but if you want to expand a little bit more about folks that are on their own journey in whatever line of work it may be, right? It can be difficult sometimes to keep going, right? And you have those setbacks. You mentioned cup of coffee here and there. It can be hard when you have the cup of coffee and then it goes away and then you got to find the next cup of coffee, right? So just curious if you had any words of motivation to anyone listening to this who's on their own journey.
Yeah, if you want it, if you really, really want it, you'll get there. And the reason why I say that confidently is the journey will force you many times to be in situations where the money isn't there, the attention isn't there, the opportunities may not even be there, but you've got to find a way to get better and keep moving forward. And sometimes that can mean no job is too small, no opportunity is too little. Take what you can get. There is no substitute in this game for reps. And if you have to create your own reps in the mirror with a cell phone cam as your only way to keep documenting your progress, do it. Get out there and do it. Start a podcast with somebody. Turn the volume down on the fights and call them yourself. If you really believe this is where you're supposed to be in the journey that you're heading to, these tests end up being in place to weed out who really wants to be there and who doesn't. And I think sometimes we can get caught up comparing ourselves to others and looking at, oh, that guy came from that college. That guy's a little bit more smoother on the mic than me. That guy's been watching the game a little bit longer. But do they have the want as bad as you? Do they enjoy what they're doing as bad as you? If it's in you, you'll get there. You really will, but you're going to have to fight for it. And I don't say that as a daunting warning. I say that as an encouragement. Anything is possible. And it took me a long time, really into my 30s, to figure that out. But I put daring to be great on there, you know, a little cheeky boxing reference. But at the same time, you get to a crossroads in your life where you're like, am I going to be happy with that half cup of coffee that I had that one time? Or do I think that there's enough in me that might be great if I get the chance to show it? I'm not going to stop chasing that and trying to show that, because I don't know, it's never been about, again, money, fame, or anything, like any of those little stuff. That's cool, it's great, it comes with it, Twitter followers, all that stuff. I'd be watching these fights anyway, and you're telling me I get to this Saturday put on a headset, sit next to Keith One Time Thurman, call some Showtime Boxing preliminary action, keep going on my journey closer to doing this on a daily basis. Yeah, I'm fired up for that. When's the plane take off? I'll be there. You're going to pay me too? Okay, that's great too. But guess what? I would have been there anyway because I love doing this. So protect that dream, but protect that passion, because if it never feels like work, it never will be. I mean, that's really, it's a paraphrase of a great quote, but that's the way it feels at the end of the day.
I can hear I've been asking people about this. I can hear a common theme of being grateful. And I hear that in your voice. I appreciate your expertise. I co-sign everything you said. And I think anyone who may be listening, if you don't have that college degree or whatever, you'll always have that unique POV that someone else doesn't have.
Yeah. I'm a college dropout. I'm almost a proud college dropout. You know, things didn't go my way, but dude, I put in the blood, sweat, and tears in the back door to come in through the kitchen. And now I'm serving in the restaurant, or maybe I'm busting tables. I don't know. You get the analogy. So
something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If luck closes the door, you go in through the window. Something along
those lines. Really, really, in the business world, when you knock on that door, get ready. They're going to tell you no. But the people that go home with that no, right, are the people that don't end up doing this one day. No, in this case means not now, not yet. You got to figure out how to way to make that no into a yes.
I'm certainly motivated, and hopefully anyone listening to this is too. I have to go to Starbucks now after all that cup of coffee talk. Brian Campbell, I want to thank you so much for the time, for breaking it down, for inspiring all of us, inspiring me. I hope to work with you again very soon. Best of luck this weekend. Calling fights for Showtime. Enjoy all the other great combat sports we have. Thank you so much for the time, and I hope to talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
You can hear the passion in Brian Campbell's voice. BC breaking it down, as always. I expect nothing less from our man, BC. Next up, we are going to be talking to the Schmo. Of course, it's a crazy, amazing, fascinating combat sports weekend, and it's topped by UFC 278 in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I actually caught up with the Schmo, who's in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's getting ready to go to the official press conference to cover this massive event. He spoke to Luke Rockhold earlier this week. I'm going to talk to him about that. We're going to talk about the main event and Usman Edwards. We're going to talk about Joshua Usyk too. We're going to break it all down and get a little bit of the origins of the Schmo. How did the character and the Schmo come together and the inspirations behind the Schmo? So without further ado, here is my conversation with the Schmo. I am Karan Bhatia chatting with the Schmo. You've seen him as the co-host of the Schmo Zone. You've seen his content everywhere. We're of course going to break down UFC 278 and all the other great events this weekend. Schmo, how are you doing, my friend?
Karan, it's a pleasure to join you here from beautiful Salt Lake City. We're getting ready for the UFC 278 press conference. Pleased to join you again, my friend.
I'm lucky to get a few minutes with you before the press conference. You're right in there. You're right on the scene. And I know you spoke to some fighters already who are on the card. Wanted to get your thoughts, of course. Let's start on this big main event, Usman Edwards to the rematch. They did fight once before. That was a long time ago. A lot has changed since. If we look at the odds from our friends at DraftKings, we know that Usman is a favorite, but we know Edwards is live as well. What are your thoughts on this main event fight?
Well, think about this from Usman's standpoint. Now, this is the third fight in a row where he's got a rematch right here for the title shot. He goes from Masvidal, Colby Covington, Leon Edwards. I know he fought Leon Edwards before he was a champion in 2015. Leon Edwards, talk about one of the most unlucky guys in the UFC. This guy's had, what, like six canceled bouts? This guy's been talked about in that conversation for a title shot for years now, and finally he's getting that opportunity this weekend. It comes to fruition. It's a rematch. Both these guys have improved significantly since they last saw each other in 2015. It's about who's improved the most. Obviously, Usman's improved in the striking. Obviously, you got Leon Edwards, who's improved in the wrestling and the grappling department. It's going to be a battle between two talented guys. The odds makers have the favorite being Usman, the champion, for a reason. He gets this victory, 16 straight, ties Anderson Silva's record. I mean, there's a lot of history on the line, but Usman's dialed in. He's focused. I know there's chatter about him boxing Canelo. There's chatter about him going up to 205 pounds and challenging for the strap, but he knows the task at hand. He knows Leon Edwards is a game opponent. This is going to be the best version of Leon Edwards we probably see in the cage, but is that going to be enough?
It's going to be one of the best versions of Edwards, but it'll also be one of the best and most confident versions of Usman, and that makes for a fascinating matchup. Another fascinating matchup, Costa versus Rockhold. I cannot wait for this one. I feel like there's so many questions that will be answered. We know Costa has had the weight issues. Rockhold, we haven't seen him in there in a little bit. I know that you spoke with him. You had an exclusive interview. You spent some time with him. What did you learn from your time with Rockhold, and what do you expect to see in the octagon?
Well, Luke Rockhold, he's definitely dialed. You talk about a guy who's not afraid to fight anyone. Think about his last three opponents. He fought Jan Błachowicz, Yoel Romero, and now he's got Paulo Costa. He's fighting behemoths of men. This fight right here, both these guys, is it their last fight in the UFC? Borachina at Media Day, he admitted that this is the last fight on his UFC contract. Luke Rockhold, he has not fought at middleweight in 4 years. He's not fought in the UFC in 3 years. And on the other side, Paulo Costa, he has not won a fight in 3 years. Both these guys are desperate for a victory. They're hungry for a victory. They both need a victory. And it's likely that this is the last time we see one of these guys, if not both these guys, in the UFC. It's a great fight. There's a reason why this is the co-main event. Both these guys are not afraid to bang. Luke Rockhold's proven time in and time out he's not afraid to fight everybody. You all have questions because of the time off. He had the canceled fight with Sean Strickland. And listen, you could argue Paulo Costa is higher, and he's ranked higher too. He's a higher step in competition than a Sean Strickland. It's going to be intriguing, and both these guys are going to bang, and Luke Rockhold, he seems like he's in the right headspace. You're right. The Schmo paid a visit to him at his house on Sunday following the UFC San Diego Fight Night card right before he left for Utah. He drove to Utah. He's not staying at the fighter hotel. He's staying, 20 miles down the road, 30 miles down the road in Park City, Utah. clearing his headspace. He seems to be in a good spot. You know, it depends what version of Luke Rockhold we see, but it also depends of what version of Paulo Costa we've seen. He looks like he's going to make weight. He guarantees he's going to make weight. So the schmo guarantees we're going to get a good fight.
It's interesting because it's not the case of a fighter barely missing weight last time around, like trying to make weight and not doing it. It's different if you try and you don't. If he's actually trying this time, which all indications are he is, that says something. But at the same time, mental is everything we know in combat sports. And if Luke Rockhold is in a good place, I'm sure we're going to see good things out of him. I can't wait for that one. Wanted to ask you about another fight on the card, Jose Aldo versus Merab. This is a close fight. If you look at the odds provided by DraftKings, Aldo plus 110, Merab minus 130. Both these guys have been on recent winning streaks. You know, they're doing their thing at bantamweight. There's a lot of future implications with other matchups that could take place as well. Your thoughts on this fight and what it means for each man's career?
Well, it seems to be a tournament without an official tournament about what's going on in the bantamweight division. We saw last week Chito Vera knocking out Dominic Cruz to kick things off. Now we got this fight this week. Obviously, we got Sugar Sean O'Malley, Peter Yan in Abu Dhabi with champion Aljamain Sterling defending against TJ Dillashaw. You can even throw Song Yadong and Corey Sandhagen in that mix. But this is a very intriguing matchup because Merab Dvalishvili, the Schmo believes he's got the most takedowns in bantamweight history, and he's fighting Jose Aldo, who's notoriously has great takedown defense. Will Merab take this guy down at will? Aaron, will he be willing to stand and bang with Aldo? Aldo, this seems to be his last run at gold right here in the bantamweight division, the last type of hoorah type situation here. You're going to have to really impress in order to be that one cementing yourself as next in line for the title shot. And we could see it right here. The Chito Vera performance, fourth round knockout of Dominic Cruz last week in San Diego. These guys have a lot to live up to, a lot of excitement, but whose style is going to win? That is going to be the most intriguing component of this matchup.
It's a spectacular day for combat sports on Saturday. There's a lot of stuff going on. We touched upon a little bit about the UFC card. Of course, there's boxing with Joshua Usyk too. It's a fascinating rematch. I can't wait for that one. We have BKFC in action. We got PFL with Kayla Harrison and Chris Wade. There's just so many things going on outside of this UFC card with boxing and PFL and BKFC. What intrigues you about this Saturday? Any matchups, any storylines that the Schmo is looking out for?
Well, first off, if you're a UK combat sports fan, you're in absolute heaven because you got Leon Edwards representing. Then you got Joshua representing. Yes. And then right there in the hometown, you got Venom Page and he's got Mike Perry. You got BKFC. The Schmo's very intrigued about this bare knuckle fight because he got Mike Perry. The Schmo was there in person for his first BKFC event, and he didn't realize how much your knuckles get cut up and how hard it is and how much different it is than putting on 4 ounce gloves, or better yet, 8 ounce or 10 ounce gloves if you're a boxer and you're sparring and whatnot. You get cut up, and it comes to a certain point where he was throwing with Julian Lane, his last opponent, where he just didn't even want to punch him in the face anymore because his hands kept hurting. Venom Page, we know about his accolades. We know about his versatility with his striking, with his kicking and his punching. He's going to be limited here to just his punching. And will he be able to continue those unique angles? Obviously, he's got the height and the length advantage. He's just using these weapons, though. We're not talking elbows. We're just talking fists. Will he connect? And will his knuckles be able to survive the length of time hitting constantly? Mike Perry, having the experience, he realizes how much more of a different game this is from MMA. So you see a difference there. Venom Page has the striking accolades, has the striking advantage, but this is a little different sport. And Mike Perry's not afraid to brawl. This is going to be pure excitement. And then the rematch with Joshua Usyk. I mean, come on, man. But the Schmo will say this. Yes, Usyk's had his time off. And yes, he was supporting his home country. He was doing the military thing. But listen, this guy's got the mental edge. He's already beaten Joshua. He knows Joshua's game. And Joshua's got a lot more to prove. There's a lot more pressure, the Schmo thinks, on Joshua than Usyk to go out and do this again. So a lot of high stakes this weekend. And the Schmo just can't wait to see it.
Can't wait to see it. And it, there's just so many good storylines. You mentioned being a UK combat sports fan. It's this is your weekend. Well, it'll continue next weekend. We got KSI fighting two fights in London as well. So it's going to continue. But there's just some brilliant fights and fascinating matchups this weekend. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your journey and your process. And I know you're obviously a hard worker. We're talking to you right now. You're in a hotel room in Salt Lake City. You spent time with Luke Rockhold earlier. You spent time with so many fighters. Obviously, relationship building has been crucial for you, and also just putting in the time and being there. What have been the keys to success in building your name and your brand for the Schmo?
Great question. It first comes down to the fighters. You have to build a rapport with the fighters. If they don't trust you, if they don't look to you as guidance, and they don't want to speak to you, you're not going to have much loyalty to the fans. Your key to the fans is to get the trust of the fighters. You got to be like Switzerland. You got to stay neutral. You can't favor one party over the other. You can't talk smack to these guys on the internet, on the Twitter, on the Instagram. You got to be neutral. You got to think like a fight fan. You got to understand and listen to what the fighter is feeling and thinking, and then they have to trust you enough to relay their message. That's why Luke Rockhold invited the Schmo and the Schmo's better half, Helen, to his home on Sunday, because he knew he could trust us to get the message out. Obviously, there's a line that you have to play as well, too, because listen, some of these guys want to get into some very deep issues when it comes to fighter pay, which is a conversation for another day and whatnot, and healthcare and so on and so forth, which are very real issues and topics. But most importantly is these fighters, listen, you're only as good as your next fight. A lot of these guys and all these combat sports, they're independent contractors. So they have to work with a journalist that they could trust. And the Schmo's been able to find a unique way to garner that trust and obviously deliver the message in a creative and fun and informative way. And I would say, make sure you establish the trust of the person, the subject you're interviewing, and in this case, the athletes. And then if you're worried about the fans will come and the rest of the dominoes fall in place.
And the Schmo has clearly created his own audience and his own following by cultivating those relationships and getting that access. You mentioned fighter pay. Hopefully we can see things improve in that world. And it would be great to see healthcare and long-term care for fighters. I think that's universally what fans want. Last question before I let you go, you were talking about what you've done as a combat sports journalist, reporter, interviewer, on-air talent, all of those things. I know that when you started, you wanted to create a breath of fresh air in sports journalism. And something I saw on your website, it said the Schmo is a mix of Craig Sager and Rodney Dangerfield. And I can hear that in your voice and your presentation. What was it about the landscape of sports journalism when you started that you said, hey, I don't want to be like all of these other guys. I feel like this, I could do something different. What was it about what you saw in the landscape, and then how were you able to capitalize on that?
I feel like there was a lot of complacency. There's a very lazy approach on the journalism side. The very common question after a fighter wins a fight is, how does it feel? We all know it feels good. We all know what they're going to say. We can't continue to ask questions that we know the answers to. We have to go a little bit deeper. We have to be a little unique. We have to put ourselves not only in the fans' shoes and the fans' perspective, but the athlete's perspective too. So the Schmo saw a unique way to inject a little humor and comedy, because the Schmo, he's a self-deprecating guy. We grew up outside of the city of Chicago, so we had influence from a lot of the Chicago Second City legends. Craig Sager, huge icon, because the Schmo being a Chicago guy, grew up in the 90s, the Chicago Bulls basketball being the first love. So obviously always saw Craig Sager on TV. And Rodney Dangerfield, the way he could always control a room, never getting any respect. The Schmo can emulate a lot of those types of qualities that Rodney Dangerfield felt throughout his time. And he didn't get a start till later in his journey. Kind of similar to the Schmo, except he was even older than the Schmo, but different industries, of course. But I just felt the big disconnect and really relaying the message from the athlete's perspective and the fans' perspective and really bridging the gap. And that's where the Schmo saw the sweet spot.
I hear you with that. And of course, Craig, the great Craig Sager, we can see it in your fashion sense. I want to thank you so much for your time. I know that you have a press conference to get to, so I'm going to let you go. Appreciate you breaking it down, breaking down UFC, PFL, BKFC, boxing. We got it all this weekend. Schmo, thank you again. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. And I'll see you on the other broadcast. It's always great crossing paths with you, my friend, and we'll do it again soon.
And that brings us to the end here. I want to thank my guests, Ariel Helwani, Brian Campbell, aka BC, and of course, the Schmo. I hope you guys enjoyed the breakdown of UFC 278 and all the other great combat sports that are happening this weekend. Remember, this episode was powered by DraftKings. Use promo code CURRAN on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Bet $5. You get $200 in free bets instantly. Of course, as always, minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. Check out the show notes for details. I want to thank my guests one more time. I want to thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you enjoy the combat sports this weekend. I'm looking forward to it all. Check out more content on Twitter and Instagram on my personal channels, twitter.com/Karan Bhatia or on Instagram at Karan Bhatia. You can also check out the podcast on @ATE_podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Please retweet and share this show if you enjoyed it. I am Karan Bhatia, and this was Ask the Experts.
Thank you for listening to Ask the Experts with Karan Bhatia.